the two of them. But they had been good nights, somewhere halfway between love and friendship, an oasis of sweetness in the harsh desert that comprised Kelsey's life since leaving the cottage. She would miss that side of Penn. But deep within the pain was a kernel of respect for him, growing larger every second. "We're alike," she thought, staring at Penn's face. Behind her eyes she suddenly saw her city, its rolling hillsides aflame, and she realized that this work, the great work of her life, outweighed anything that she would ever want for herself. There might be more men, many of them, but none of them would ever get in the way of the work. She would not allow it. Taking a deep breath, she reached out, offering her hand for Penn to shake. Penn smiled, his eyes bright and unguarded, and Kelsey realized that she would never see him this way again. They would talk and laugh and give each other hell, just as Kelsey did with the rest of her guards. But it would never again be like this. They shook hands, and Penn held on to her hand for a moment before he dropped it, swallowing. When he looked up again, Penn the man was gone. And he was now Penn the guard, his eyes flicking over her, distant and analytical.
"You don't look well, lady."
"I just woke up." But he was right. She had been awakened by Mace. Katie's voice beat insistently against her mind, refusing to leave her alone. "Le Vieux is here? Yes? I need to speak to him." She needed to speak to him, all right. Grab his shirt and shake him until he coughed up some answers about what had happened to Jonathan Tyr. There was no need to wait for the slow pace of Katie's vision, not when she could demand the whole story from someone who had actually been there.
"You'll have to wait, lady."
Mace had reappeared behind her with Elston in tow. Kelsey could not get her bearings in this place. There was something odd about the corridors, some proportion that was off.
"Le Vieux left several hours ago and said he won't be back until late. But there's dinner downstairs. Penn, go."
Penn left. Kelsey watched him go, feeling one last pang of sorrow. And then she turned back to Mace and Elston, her mouth hardening.
"The work." "This corridor moves, sir," Elston muttered. "I keep catching things around corners."
Mace looked over his shoulder, his face tightening.
"I don't trust the mistress of the house. The sooner we're out of here, the better." "Is this agreeable to you, lady?"
Elston asked.
"Me as your close guard?"
She nodded, smiling up at him, though her heart ached.
"Let's get some dinner, then."
She followed them down the hall. Kelsey came awake in darkness. For a moment she didn't know where she was. It seemed every night was a new place to sleep these days. But then a torch snapped in its bracket and she remembered. She was in Lady Chiltern's house, in the chamber Mace had assigned her. Elston was just outside the door. Something was in the room. Kelsey had heard the softest of movements behind her, little more than a whisper of air somewhere near the door. She debated rolling over, but when she tried, she found her muscles frozen. She didn't want to see. Unbidden, her mind conjured up an image of the little girl in the dungeon, and Kelsey felt her entire body break out in goose flesh. She could shout for help, Elston was just outside, but the child in the dungeon had been very quick. Another soft sound, closer now. The soft rasp of leather against the floor. A footstep, perhaps? But Kelsey's imagination said differently. She pictured the child 2 feet from her, poised to leap. Not like Brenner, her mind whispered, and Kelsey felt her nerves suddenly galvanized. No, she would not be taken as she had been by Brenner, overpowered, lying helpless. Keeping still, she flexed all of her muscles, preparing them for motion. Her knife was beneath her head, tucked into its scabbard under the pillow. There was no way to grab it without giving warning, but she thought she could have it out a half second after she began to move. One last step, right beside Kelsey now. She whipped into motion, rolling toward the sound, and connected solidly, tumbling out of the bed to land on top of her attacker. For a moment she saw a dark silhouette beneath her, and then the figure emitted a low, rat-like squeal as it fell backward. Kelsey jerked her knife from its scabbard and scrambled on top of the thing, looking for its neck. Then she drew back, horrified. The creature had no face. But a moment later, Kelsey realized how ridiculous that was. She had been fooled by the firelight, by her own overstimulated imagination. This was no monster, only a woman, wearing a long black dress and a lacy veil that covered her entire head. The woman tried to scramble backward, but Kelsey straddled her, pinning her down. "Lady Chiltern, I presume," she panted, exploring the veil with her hands. "And what do you want with me, that you stalk me around the house?" Finding the edge of the veil, she jerked hard, tearing the lace away and revealing the woman's face to the light. But now it was Kelsey's turn to scramble backward as fast as she could, her breath tearing from her throat into a single harsh rasp. The face beneath the veil belonged to her mother. Chapter 12. The Mistress of the House. Hell? Hell is a fairy tale for the gullible. For what punishment could be worse than that we inflict upon ourselves? We burn so badly in this life that there can be nothing left. Father Tyler's collected sermons from the Avath Archive.
"It was Mace's idea,"
the woman said, as though that explained everything. They were sitting in 2 high-backed armchairs, facing the chamber's empty fireplace. It was cold, but Kelsey had taken the Red Queen's superstitions to heart and refused to light a fire. She didn't understand Roe Finn's long game, not yet. But if he was truly free, Kelsey could only be a threat to him now. The torchlight was very dim, but Kelsey could not stop staring at her mother, hoping to find a flaw in her appearance, something that would indicate that the entire thing was a trick. But she found no such reassurance. The woman before her was older than the portrait Kelsey had seen in the keep, fine lines bracketing her mouth and eyes. The black dress and veil, indicative of mourning, aged her further, but she was unmistakably Alyssa Raleigh. "What was Mace's idea?"
"Why, to get me out."
Alyssa gave a tinkling laugh.
"So many people trying to kill me. It was almost exciting."
Kelsey looked to the door almost in desperation. She had ordered Elston to fetch Mace on the double, but she had done so through a closed door, and now she worried that Elston might have misunderstood her words. When Mace got here, she thought she might throttle him. All of the guilt Mace had dispensed when Kelsey kept things to herself, and here he had been holding the biggest secret of all in his hands.
"Carol and Mace were the best of my guards, the smartest, you know,
Elissa paused, her doll's mouth turning down at the corners.
Mace told me Carol is dead.
Yes, Kelsey replied automatically, but a moment later she realized that she had never seen his body either. Was he still out there somewhere too? Were Barty and Carlin? How could she take Mace's word about anything now? For years, Kelsey had wanted so many things from the woman sitting before her. Love and approval and vindication, and later, a chance to scream into her face. But now that the moment was here, Kelsey didn't know what she wanted, except to wish that she were not in this room. She had gotten used to hating her mother, had grown comfortable with it. She didn't need the status quo shaken up now.
They both had the idea, but Mace was the one who snuck me from the keep. All those hiding places he has, you know, he moved me here.
Elissa frowned again.
It's a dull life, so far from the capital. Mace visits whenever he can, and I have my business.
What business? Kelsey asked sharply.
Dresses,
Elissa replied proudly.
I'm one of the most sought-after designers in the tier, but I have to work from here, send someone to take measurements and orders.
Her mouth drooped.
I can't go anywhere.
Kelsey grimaced. Any number of harsh phrases came to her lips, but she held them in. She would give this woman her full, undiluted opinion, but only after she got the whole story.
But I am so pleased to see you,
Elissa exclaimed, putting a hand on her arm. Kelsey tensed, but Elissa seemed not to notice, too busy examining her, eyes roving over her face.
And so pretty, too.
Kelsey recoiled, almost as though she'd been slapped. All of those days in the cottage, when she had stood by the window, looking out and waiting for her mother to come. She had been so sure that her mother would be wise and kind and good, that she would praise Kelsey as Carlin did not, praise her for all the things she had learned, all the work she had done. Even if Kelsey had been pretty, that was not the praise she waited for. Because even in her youngest years, she had already known how little it truly meant. For a moment, she hesitated on the point of telling Elissa that this beauty wasn't her own, then swallowed the words. I thought there was a body, she croaked. When you died, there was a body.
So there was.
Mace replied behind her, making Kelsey jump. He had slipped silently into the room while they spoke, and now his large form emerged from the shadows to rest a hand on Elissa's shoulder.
How did you get in here?
He asked.
This place is full of secret passages, a trick I learned from you.
The body, Kelsey demanded. You said there was a body.
The Queen's dead body,
Mace agreed,
lying in bed with a cut throat.
How? Kelsey demanded. Mace merely looked at her for a long moment. Oh, Lazarus, no. A double.
A perfect double. Close enough to fool even the rest of the guard.
Where did you find her?
Carol found her, in the gut plying her trade.
Kelsey stared at him, as though seeing a stranger.
It was very clever of them, really, Elissa put in, to think of it and then find someone who looked so much like me. It was a shame she had to die, even if she was only a whore.
Kelsey's hand curled into a fist, but she held it back. The creature in the other armchair wasn't worth it, but Mace... You did this, Lazarus.
I'm a Queen's Guard, lady. My first job is to protect the Queen.
She glared at him, for his words had opened a wide gulf inside her. For the first time she understood that there were two sides to that statement, one good and one dreadful. Mace, too, had a job to do, just as Kelsey did. Sometimes she thought she would do anything to bring her crumbling country back together. But there was a low beneath which she wouldn't sink. Wasn't there?
We had a new assassination attempt every day, lady. Some of them astonishingly clever, too, probably originating in Demain. Carol and I knew that sooner or later someone would get past us. We couldn't just sit and wait for it to happen.
And this was your solution?
Yes. That, or let the Queen die.
What about the kingdom you left behind? And to my uncle of all people, what about them?
The safety of the Queen, lady.
Mace replied inexorably.
All else is secondary.
Did you find a double for me, too?
No, lady. I knew you wouldn't allow it.
Damn right I wouldn't, she snapped. I don't know what kind of moral carnival you think we're running, but...
You know me now, lady. You didn't know me 20 years ago. I was a different man then. Not so far removed from the creche.
Oh, he was, Elissa broke in, patting Kelsey's hand before Kelsey could snatch it away. Shouting and fighting, and then sulking in the corner if he didn't get his way. Carol used to call him half wild, and he wasn't wrong.
Kelsey removed her hand from the arm of the chair, feeling sick. Despite the difference in age, her mother seemed younger than Kelsey, almost like a child. But Kelsey would not allow her to escape that way, child or not. She owed answers. Why did you give me away?
I had no choice.
Elissa's eyes darted toward Mace, then away, a furtive movement.
You were in danger.
You're lying.
Why do you want to talk about the past?
Her mother pleaded.
The past was so ugly.
Ugly, Kelsey murmured. Mace shot her a pleading glance, but she ignored him, disgusted. Was he really going to run interference for this woman even now? Lazarus, leave us alone.
Lady,
close the door behind you and wait outside. He stared at her for another long, anguished moment, and then left. Kelsey turned back to her mother. Some part of her displeasure seemed to have finally broken through to Elissa, who had begun to fidget in her chair and would not meet Kelsey's eyes. You made all of them promise to keep the shipment from me.
Yes.
Why? Kelsey heard her own voice rising in anger. What possible purpose could that serve?
I thought I would be able to fix it,
her mother said quietly.
I thought it was a temporary solution, and soon we would think of something else long before you came home. Mace is so smart. I thought surely he and Thorn,
fix the shipment. What in holy hell are you talking about?
I wish you wouldn't swear. It's so ugly.
That word again. If her mother had set out deliberately to anger Kelsey, she could not have chosen a better. What good was anything, after all, if not beautiful? Her mother's mind seemed to Kelsey like a still, frozen pond. Ideas might skate across it, but nothing would ever penetrate. Kelsey wanted accountability, wanted her mother to answer for her selfishness, her poor decisions, her crimes. But how did one demand accountability from such a frozen waste?
I hoped you would never need to know, her mother continued. And it didn't turn out so badly. We kept the peace for 17 years.
You didn't keep peace,
Kelsey's temper was here now. She sensed it stalking just around the edges of her mind, waiting for any chance to present itself. You bought peace by trafficking the people you were supposed to protect.
They were poor,
Alyssa insisted indignantly.
The kingdom couldn't feed them anyway. At least in Mortmain they would be fed and taken care of. That's what Thorne said.
And why would you ever question the words of Arlan Thorne? The urge to smack her mother across the face was so strong that Kelsey was forced to shove her hands beneath her thighs, sitting on them until it passed. This is my mother, she thought. The idea was unbearable. How she wished that she were Carlin's daughter, anyone else's. This woman had given her half of what she was. But only half. The thought struck Kelsey like a life rope, and she leaned forward, suddenly forgetting her anger. Who is my father? Alyssa's eyes dropped, her expression once more anxious.
Surely it can no longer matter.
I know you worked your way through your entire guard. I couldn't care less. But I want a name.
Perhaps I don't know.
You do. So does Lazarus.
He wouldn't say.
Alyssa smiled.
My faithful guard.
Kelsey grimaced. Lazarus doesn't belong to anyone.
He did once. To me?
Alyssa's eyes were distant now.
I threw him away.
I don't want to hear about it.
Why do we speak of the past?
Alyssa asked again.
It's long gone. I hear the Red Queen is finally dead. Is it so?
Kelsey closed her eyes, opened them again. You won't distract me. My father, I want a name.
It doesn't matter. He's dead.
Then there's no reason not to tell me. Alyssa's eyes darted away again, and an awful suspicion suddenly crossed Kelsey's mind. In all of her ruminations on who had fathered her, there was one option she had never considered, because she couldn't. Mace would have told her. No, he wouldn't, her mind reminded her, almost smugly. He's a queen's guard, through and through.
One of my guards,
Alyssa finally replied.
I took up with him for only a few weeks. He didn't matter.
The name.
He was so sad when he came to us.
Alyssa was babbling now, her words running together.
He was a good swordsman, even though he came from farm country. Carol wanted him for the guard, and I only thought to make him feel better. Didn't mean to...
Who?
Mern. I don't know if you ever met him.
I met him. Kelsey heard her own voice, flat and almost suspiciously calm. But her mother wasn't one to notice such things. Did he know? She demanded. Did he know he was my father?
I don't think so. He never asked.
Kelsey felt a wave of relief, but only a small one. There seemed to be two halves of her mind now, running parallel tracks. One functioned well enough, but the other was transfixed by memory. Blood spurting over her hand and Mern's smiling face, eyes hazy with morphia. I killed my father.
Carol brought Mern into the guard. He had lost a wife and daughter to the Mort, and oh, he was a wreck.
Alyssa looked up now, and Kelsey saw a rare hint of rueful honesty in her eyes.
I've never been able to resist a wreck.
Kelsey nodded, keeping the pleasant smile on her face with an effort. It's not my weakness. I killed my father. but I have read of it. Please go on.
When Mace found out, he was just furious. But you know, he didn't have any right to be. We were long done by then. Sometimes I do wonder, though, if he took you away merely to punish me.
Lazarus took me away.
He and Carol. They did it behind my back.
The trace of a pout crossed Alyssa's lips.
I would never have given you away.
Kelsey sat back in her chair. Mern pushed mercifully into the background. Finally, an answer to the question that had tormented her since that day on the keep lawn. Why would a woman as selfish as this one give her child away for safekeeping? Kelsey had conjectured all manner of reasons, and yet had missed the simplest answer of all. Her mother hadn't given her away. Others had made the decision for her. But why?
I missed you a great deal at first, Alyssa's voice was musing, as though she were describing something that had happened to someone else. You were a sweet baby, and oh, how you used to smile at me. But it turned out to be a good choice, else we would have had to find a double for you too.
She giggled, and at the sound, something in Kelsey finally broke open. She sprang from the chair, knocking it over, grabbed the smiling woman, and began to shake her. But that wasn't enough. She wanted to slap her mother, demand that she account for her failings, that she make amends somehow.
Lady,
Mace murmured, and Kelsey paused. He had stolen back into the room, and now he stood several feet away, his hands raised to halt her.
What, Lazarus?
Her hands were only inches from her mother's throat, and she wanted... Oh, she wanted... Her mother was not true evil, perhaps, any more than Thorn, or the jailer, or even the young Roe Finn. But all the same, she wanted so badly.
Don't do it, lady.
You couldn't stop me?
Perhaps not, but I would have to try, and she is...
Mace took a deep breath.
She is not worth it.
Kelsey looked down at her mother, who had shrunken into her chair and was staring up at her with wide, surprised eyes. Worse than surprised. Bewildered. As though she could not imagine what she had done wrong. Kelsey wondered if a much younger Alyssa had looked just this way as the assassination attempts began. Shipments rolling beneath her windows each month, a woman unable to understand why she wasn't loved by all the world.
Don't do it, lady,
Mace repeated, his voice pleading. And now Kelsey saw that he was right, though not for the reasons he believed. No matter what Kelsey did here, she would not have what she wanted. She longed for revenge. But the woman she wanted to unleash her fury upon was not this one. This woman-child could never comprehend the magnitude of her mistakes. There would be no explanation, no accountability. There would be no catharsis. No one for me to hate. In a book, the thought would perhaps have been liberating, would have healed something deep inside Kelsey. In reality, it was the loneliest idea she could have imagined. All of the strength faded from her arms, and she backed away.
There, that's sorted, said Alyssa,
her face brightening.
Are we all done with the past now?
All done, Kelsey replied, though her voice sounded ghastly to her own ears. They would never be done with the past, but her mother wasn't one to understand that. Alyssa stood up from her own chair, her arms outstretched, and Kelsey saw, horrified, that her mother meant to embrace her. She scooted backward, stumbling over the uneven stones.
"What is it?"
her mother asked, her voice bewildered again and worse, a little hurt.
"There are no more secrets now. We can finally get to know each other."
"No."
"What? Why not?"
Alyssa stared at her, that faint hint of a pout back at the corners of her mouth.
"You're my daughter. I wasn't a perfect mother, certainly, but you're grown now. Surely we can put the past behind us."
"No, we can't." Kelsey paused, choosing her words very carefully, for she never planned to speak to this woman again. "You are a selfish woman, and careless, and stupid. You should never have had the fate of others in your hands. I believe that I am a better person for having been raised by Barty and Carlin, for never having known you. I want no part of you at all." Her mother's mouth fell open. She began to protest, but Kelsey turned away. Alyssa tried to follow, but Mace moved to block her way.
"Where is your door?" he demanded.
"What door?"
"Your door," he repeated patiently. "How did you get in here?"
"It's here."
Alyssa tapped the wall, and a door opened to reveal a black rectangle in the stone. Another secret passage. Was no building in this kingdom just as it appeared?
"Go."
"But she doesn't understand. She..."
"The Queen has spoken."
Alyssa's lips rounded in outrage.
"I'm the Queen."
"No. You traded your crown for safety long ago."
"But..."
"Will you go, or must I escort you?"
"You used to be my best guard, Mace."
Her mother sounded as though she were on the verge of tears.
"What happened?"
Mace's jaw tightened. Without another word, he guided her through the doorway and yanked the door shut behind her. For a long minute, fists slammed against the other side, and then there was silence. "Does the guard know?" Kelsey asked Mace. "The rest of them?"
"Only Carol. He always used me for the jobs no one else would do. I often think it's why he recruited me."
She could always come back. She could come right down the hall and show herself to the whole guard.
"She won't."
"Why?"
"Because I told her I would kill her if she did."
"Did you mean it?"
"I don't know."
Kelsey sat on her bed. She wanted to lie down, go back to sleep and forget all of this. But she sensed that if she and Mace didn't have this conversation now, they never would. Kelsey would lose her nerve and they would fall back into their easy, sometimes acerbic friendship, a still pond that both of them would want to leave undisturbed. "I killed my father," she told Mace. "I didn't know, but I did it all the same."
"Yes, lady."
"Why didn't you tell me?"
"If you hadn't put Myrne out of his misery, lady, we would have. It was the right thing to do. He was broken, and at the time it seemed unlikely that you would ever find out who he was. Certainly none of us would ever have told you, not after that."
"You should have told me."
"To what end?"
Kelsey couldn't answer that. She had killed many people. Was this so different? And what was so important about blood anyway? She had just cut ties with the woman who'd borne her, and it had been the right decision. She might have many feelings about that scene down the line, some of them tinged with regret, but not nearly as much regret as if she'd made a different decision. Blood did not make Elissa a better mother, nor had it made Myrne a father. He had knifed her in the back. Kelsey felt far closer to Barty and Carlin, even to Mace, than she ever had to her own parents. "Only as strong as I want it to be," she whispered. Someone had said that to her once. Mace? The Red Queen? She couldn't remember. Animals cared about bloodlines, but humans should have evolved to do better. "The circumstances of your birth don't matter. Kindness and humanity are everything." This voice she recognized. William Tyr, speaking to Lily on one of the worst nights of her life. If it was true, if that was the Tyr test, then both of Kelsey's parents had failed. "Where do we go from here, Lazarus?" she asked. "Do I stay in exile just like she does, hiding out here in the middle of nowhere, while things get worse and worse?"
"I don't know, lady. We can't stay here, not for long, but I don't know where we go. New London is under the Holy Father and the Mort, but you have only 75 soldiers downstairs. It would be suicide to go back."
Kelsey nodded. She was no stranger to charging into the lion's mouth. Indeed, reckless action had been at the foundation of much of her queenship, even when all she could do was get herself killed. But it felt equally reckless somehow to simply sit here, guaranteeing her own safety while her kingdom burned. That was her mother's way. "We came so far, Lazarus. Did we really come all this way only to fail?"
"Sometimes that's just how it turns out, lady."
But Kelsey didn't believe that. Perhaps it was simply her long life of reading books, where plot was carefully scripted and every action taken was supposed to mean something. They had fought through too much together to fail now. There must be some option, even if she couldn't see it. Her restless mind searched the past, the many-layered history of the Tyr through which she had suffered. Jonathan Tyr's death was approaching rapidly, a terrible tragedy, but could it have been averted? And would that really have saved the Tyr? Katie might have been able to kill Roe Finn, maybe, but the town's problems were deeper than a single man, and killing a would-be dictator only left an empty throne. Kelsey sensed a solution somewhere in the past, but it would not come clear. Not yet. How did Jonathan Tyr die? Katie had not shown her yet, but she could no longer wait for Katie's memories to unfold. She looked up at Mace, who still watched her with worried eyes. "Where's the fetch?" They found him out on the second-floor balcony with Hall and several of his soldiers. The sun was about to break the eastern horizon, but the morning air was crisp and cold. Winter had truly come. "Lady Chilton's, my mother's," Kelsey thought, "my mother's," house was surrounded by scrubby patches of grass that glittered with ice crystals in the ivory morning. As Kelsey and her guards emerged onto the balcony, Hall and Blazer bowed. She was glad to see both of them, though she had to cut off something from Hall that sounded horribly like the beginnings of an apology. On her way through the house, they had passed through a gallery that overlooked the entryway, a vast stone floor where soldiers slept, fewer than 100, all that remained of Hall's army. The idea of him apologizing to her was intolerable. The Fetch and his four men stood on the balcony, all of them peering eastward through spyglasses. For a moment, Kelsey was transfixed by the sight of them. Howell, Morgan, Alain, Lear, and Gavin, five boys of the town, now grown up and apparently damned. Kelsey turned to her guard. "Leave us alone for a moment."
"Not a chance," Elston snapped.
"Great God, El, do not make me go through this with every man in the guard."
"Elston," Mace said quietly, "come on."
Elston cast a murderous look at the Fetch, but followed Mace back through the glassed-in doors that gave egress to the balcony. Penn and Dyer went with them. Penn showed no reluctance at all, and Kelsey felt a slight twinge, then shelved it. She would learn to live with Penn's indifference. There were more important matters to hand. At a signal from the Fetch, his four men followed, Morgan tipping an imaginary hat to Kelsey as he went. As the doors closed, she turned back to the Fetch. She had not seen him for a very long time, or so it seemed, and he was as handsome as ever. But even so, she was surprised to find that his hold on her had diminished. She might be looking at the man, but she couldn't help seeing the boy, Gavin, arrogant and careless, an easy mark for Roe Finn. Seeing the foolish boy that he had been was a lessening of the man, and though Kelsey's first reaction was disappointment, she found it followed quickly by relief.
"You look well, Tear Queen," he remarked. "Very well for a girl who's been in prison."
"I am well."
"And what became of the Mort Queen?"
"I killed her." The Fetch made a sound of amusement. "You don't believe me?"
"I believe you. I'm laughing at myself."
"Why?"
"Once, I thought that was what you were here for, to rid us of the Mort Queen once and for all. Now you've done it, and we're no better off than we ever were. The tear still fails."
"You had a hand in that failure, Gavin." His breath caught, but a moment later he said,
"I knew that you would eventually find me out. Roe knew it too."
"What does he want?"
"What he always wanted. A crown."
"What crown?"
"The tear crown. Roe made it. Silver and sapphire. But it was no ordinary piece of jewelry. Roe said it would allow him to fix the past."
"Fix the past?" Kelsey repeated, wide awake now. She had spent months trying to figure out how to fix the past. "How?"
"I don't know. He always thought he had been robbed. That Chance had stolen something from him. He was too smart to merely be Sarah Finn's son."
"Where is this crown?"
"Somewhere in New London. I've been hunting it for months with no luck. The priest stole it from the Arvath when he fled."
"Father Tyler?"
"Yes, but we can't find him. I traced him as far as the crash, but then lost the scent."
Kelsey nodded, though her heart ached at the idea of the old priest down there. Mace might be able to find him, but she couldn't ask Mace to go back into that hellhole. He had told her of his crash project over dinner the night before, and though she was pleased that he had taken her words to heart, She had wondered why he would hire the Caden for such a job. Now she knew, and how bad would such a place have to be to frighten Mace off? He would surely scoff at all of this, crowns and magic. Kelsey could almost hear the dry skepticism in his voice, but the siren song of that idea. Fix the past. Fix the past. Echoed in her head. She turned back to the fetch. Did you kill Jonathan Tyr?
No.
You and Ro were friends. He blinked, startled by the question, and then replied,
Yes. We were. I thought we were.
Why did he hate the tears so much?
Ro always said that his birth was a great error.
What does that mean?
I don't know. But he said the crown would correct the error.
The fetch turned away, his voice cracking.
We only wanted to rebuild a decent society, like they had before the crossing.
What are you talking about? Kelsey hissed. The world before the crossing was even worse than ours.
But we didn't know that.
The fetch looked at her, his face almost pleading.
They never told us. We only knew what Ro said. He said it was a better world, where smart people who worked hard were rewarded with a better life, better houses, more food, a brighter future. That's what he offered us.
Kelsey clenched her fists. Once upon a time, she had thought herself in love with this man. But now it seemed like an episode from someone else's life. The boy, Gavin, overshadowed everything. If the fetch had declared undying love for her in that moment, she would have spat in his face. Why in God's name didn't you tell me all of this before? She demanded. What did you hope to gain by keeping so much from me?
You credit me with more purpose than I had, Tyr Queen. The answer is much simpler. I was ashamed. Would you find it so easy to lay your worst moments bare before a stranger?
No, she replied after a moment, but nor would I put my pride before the good of the kingdom.
What good. All of that is done. 300 years done. What can it possibly matter now?
The past always matters, you fool. Kelsey snarled. Once and for all, who killed Jonathan Tyr?
Oh. Ro killed him.
The fetch replied wearily.
He killed all of them. Dorian and Virginia and Evan Alcott. Anyone who would have been a problem. He even killed Ms. Ziv, the librarian, but that was too late. She had already sent most of the books from the library into hiding.
He didn't kill all of those people alone. The fetch looked up at her, his gaze stony.
Are you trying to shame me further, Tyr Queen? I was a fool, but done is done. I have shed my tears for the past.
What happened after Jonathan died?
I helped Katie get away. It was the only good thing I ever did, because Ro meant to get rid of her, too. But she was pregnant. She told me so, and I couldn't get past that. It would have been too great a sin.
Forget that, Kelsey replied shortly. The word sin never failed to irritate her, and she was sickened by the idea that he had not found Katie worth saving until she was carrying a child. Who was the father? Jonathan?
She wouldn't tell me.
The fetch turned away, but not before Kelsey saw a hint of old hurt in his eyes, and she suddenly remembered that he had once asked Katie to a festival. He had admired her, perhaps more, enough to help her flee, but not enough to help Jonathan.
She vanished and took Roe's crown with her. When Roe found out, he went mad, and I thought he would kill us all, but by then he had already started to fade. Katie had cursed us, but it took months for us to notice that something was wrong.
She didn't punish you enough. The fetch's face went red with anger, and for a moment Kelsey thought he might try to strike her. But after another moment his fist dropped, and he leaned weakly on the balcony railing, defeated.
"Say what you like, Tear Queen. But when you have lived centuries, when everyone you love has died around you, and the world is full of strangers, you might know better."
But Kelsey was in no mood to feel empathy now. She turned to survey the land beyond the balcony, squinting northward in a futile wish to see New London. But which New London? Katie's or her own? Both were now under siege, and Kelsey felt a sudden stab of grief for the failed dreams of William Tear. He had worked so hard for his better world. All of them had. Lily and Dorian and Jonathan, all of those people who had boarded the ships, they had fought and starved and even died in pursuit of mankind's oldest dream. But they hadn't known that Tyr's vision was flawed. Too easy. Utopia was not the clean slate Tyr had imagined, but an evolution. Humanity would have to work for that society, and work hard, dedicating themselves to an unending vigilance against the mistakes of the past. It would take generations, countless generations perhaps, but we could get there, Kelsey murmured, and even if not, we should always be growing closer.
What was that, Tear Queen?
Kelsey looked up, not seeing him, suddenly sure of what she had to do. She didn't know whether the past could be changed, whether William Tear's mistakes could ever be repaired, but to not even try seemed the most reckless course of all. And now Kelsey saw that she, too, had been caught by Tyr's vision. Just like Lily, just like the rest of them. Mankind's oldest dream. Even the possibility was worth dying for. She reached beneath her shirt to clutch Tyr's sapphire, sensed his better world hundreds of years away, yet so close she could almost touch it. And who was to say which was more real? The present or the past? In the moment before she turned and shouted for Mace, Kelsey realized that it didn't matter. She lived in both. 2 hours later, Kelsey sat astride a horse, surrounded by her guard, as well as Hall and his soldiers. Mace sat in front of her, and Kelsey's arms were tied around him with thick ropes. It had been Mace's idea, and a good one. A fugue might come upon Kelsey at any time now. If her guard thought her bonds odd, they gave no sign of it. Corin had bound her up, and Kib had tied his artful knots. The very act of being bound had been useful. For now it seemed too late to change her mind about going back. Kelsey wasn't a perfect atheist, not really. She took far too much comfort in the idea of the inevitable. "How fast can we ride?" she asked Mace.
"Faster now that you're not slowing us down, lady,"
Mace had replied, and the remark had silenced Kelsey, just as he had intended. Nearby sat General Hall on his grey stallion, his brother Simon beside him, and behind them the sad remnants of the Tyr army. The Fetch and his people were there too. Hall and the Fetch seemed to have an affinity of sorts, for Kelsey had seen them talking during the preparations for this ride. Kelsey felt the ultimate fraud. She knew that the only reason Hall and most of the guard had agreed to this course of action was that they believed she would take care of it somehow, equalize the odds.
"Can I do that?" Kelsey wondered.
"How?"
She didn't know. Tyr's sapphire was around her neck. Rose sapphire, tucked deep inside her saddlebag, nestled beside the chunk of rock she had taken from the past. But what good had these things ever done? Mace had once told her that she would have been better off without her sapphires, and Kelsey wondered if he wasn't right. Somewhere in New London was a crown. A crown that might help her, but that might only be a fool's hope. Chances were good that she was leading them all into a slaughter. "But I can't stay here," she thought, feeling resolve strengthen inside her. She looked up at the windows of her mother's house, sparkling panes that reflected the bright desert and revealed nothing. At the idea of leaving the black-clad woman behind, Kelsey felt only relief. She would not stay here while New London burned. It was, after all, better to die clean.
"Let's go, then,"
Mace said abruptly, and turned his horse. Kelsey swayed with him, her stomach dropping. With no control of the horse and her hands tied, she sensed the journey would be extremely unpleasant. But there was no help for it. Katie was there again, her mind doubling Kelsey's, almost overshadowing it. Kelsey remembered this from that last night in the keep, when Lily's mind had pulled her back constantly, beyond her control. She and Katie had moved toward each other gradually, like two spheres approaching each other in orbit, but now Kelsey felt as though the eclipse was almost upon them.
"We ride for New London,"
Mace shouted over the assembled crowd of soldiers.
"We will not stop, except on the Queen's or my command. If all goes well, we should be there tomorrow evening."
"If all goes well," Kelsey thought sickly. They turned toward the northwest, and even at this great distance, Kelsey fancied that she could hear screams. "Please, dear, help us," she begged silently. She even held her breath for a moment, hoping for an answer. But none came. William Tyr could not help them. They were alone. Chapter 13. The Tyr Land. 'Tis here, but yet confused. Knavery's plain face is never seen till used. Othello. William Shakespeare. Pre-crossing Anglo. The town had changed. Katie could not adequately describe the change, even to herself, but she sensed it every time she walked through the commons. The streets were different than they had been in her youth, empty and cold. Neighbors had fenced themselves in, and dilapidation had begun to set in here and there among the houses, as those who could not maintain their own dwellings were left without aid. The town had begun to smell of blight. One night, 40 families had simply up and left. By the time anyone realized they were gone, the group was already far out on the plain, working its way steadily south. Jonathan had wanted to go after them, but Katie had talked him out of it. None of